And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you tonight with Jeff Grupp. We are going to be talking about simulated universes, infinite universes, spirituality. Is there indeed a God? Let me tell you a little bit about Jeff. He's been a pastor at a jail in Michigan, a former atheist, a former Buddhist, and a former college lecturer in philosophy at Grand Valley at Western Michigan, Purdue branches campuses in Indiana as well, where he taught philosophy, and more specifically, Eastern philosophy, ethics, metaphysics, and Buddhism. Jeff, welcome back. This is a fascinating. I'm looking forward to this with you.
Hey, George. Great to talk to you again. Great to hear your voice. You're a great person and definitely an inspiration.
How have you been? You doing okay?
Yeah, really good. Really good. Better than ever. Really just living sort of on the edge in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
In the jail ministry, and it's just, there's nothing better.
Michigan's my home state. What spot here are you in Michigan?
Well, I used to teach at U of Michigan Dearborn, which I know is mapping grounds.
Exactly.
And, I taught, that was one of there in University of Detroit, the last two places I taught at. And I live in Kalamazoo now and have for a number of years. This is actually my hometown, coming back to where I went to high school and so forth. So it's just great to be back. I love this part of the country.
And U of D is where I got my college degree. Great university.
Yep definitely.
Jesuit.
I loved teaching there while I was there.
How were you an atheist and then you've become such a believer? How did that transition happen?
I've thought about that a lot myself. I became real angry in high school. I thought the system was a lie. I thought people were liars. I thought, everybody was pressuring me to I think when I talked about this in January 2019 in your show, and I remember I had pressure to become an engineer, computer scientist, attorney, all these things I didn't want to do, and I became real angry in high school, and sort of I met a woman that absolutely fell in love with. I'm still married to her now, 30 years.
Beautiful.
And we just kind of ran off and went to live in New Mexico, and I became real, real angry and hateful towards my upbringing, and part of that was the churches I was raised in. I just really lashed out and became, I kind of thought that the churches had something to do with God, which I've now learned is really not so much the case in so many instances, and I rejected God. Well, at least I thought I did. It's there's an argument that all people actually are seeking God and don't know it. That's the Bible verse Mark 1:37. I just made a short film on my website about that, praiseandlove.net, and all people are. I think back to my time when I was an atheist, and I know that deep down, at the core of my soul, I was interacting with God. I was rejecting Him. I was telling Him I hated Him, telling Him I was angry at Him, that I hated my life, and I blamed Him. I was very suicidal for many years, all the way really up until about 35, when I did turn to Christianity. I'm 51 now. And, those interactions with God, though, pushing Him away, putting my hand out to Him, get away from me and so forth, those are all instances of touching God. And when anybody who touches God starts to become like Him, that's 1 John 3:2. And, even the angry atheist out there, whether they know it or not, is the deep level of their soul is interacting with their Creator. And we can't look to the two religions I've been a part of in my life, Buddhism and Christianity. I was a very, very dedicated Buddhist until 35 when I turned to Christianity. And Buddhism actually helped me a lot, even though I had great troubles being suicidal and lots of other things going on until I was 35. And I think both of those religions are heavily corrupted, in my opinion. I think they're very similar religions, as you and I have discussed in the past. And I think they're both talking about, there's this infinite energy, supernatural energy everywhere, this light that's creating all things, that we're interacting with, whether we know it or not, at the deep level of our souls. And it's composed of absolute ecstasy and joy. And I think everybody listening, especially this audience, George.
Absolutely.
This audience is, us all gathering here tonight is sort of like this, elevated consciousness. we're all these people.
Wait till we open up the phone lines, Jeff. Wow.
Been there, done that on this show. I mean, everybody sort of wants to break down the walls, and get past all the garbage and get to the truth on this show. And that's really where joy comes from. That's really what we all have to do, or else we're going to have emptiness and misery. So anyway, to answer your question, It was really misguided thinking that people that were cruel to me from churches and so forth as a kid were had something to do with God, made me turn against God. And then it was finally until he showed me his supernatural. I'm a Christian, so I say his, but if somebody's not, you know, use whatever, you know, infinite light, whatever you want to say. I don't have anything against. I hold the position of Christian universalism where all people are saved at the end of the world. And that's very clear to me that the Bible is talking about that. We can talk about that later, but the churches have. The Bible predicts that the churches at the end of the world go on the wrong track. Galatians 1:6 says they preach a different gospel. And so for that, I think we're seeing a lot of that now, and that's what largely made me become an atheist. And it wasn't until I had direct interaction with God, which I had been happening a bit while I was an atheist. God started working in me while I was an atheist. I was sort of this really empty, unhappy, miserable, very mean person up until about 35. And then, but there would be these moments, George, where I would have incredible joy, rapture, ecstasy. I remember this one instance. I was in Walmart, and I saw this really deformed, I don't know if it was a child, I think, you know, maybe like a high school age child. You know, one of those situations where normally you'd find yourself, you know, reacting with a grotesque reaction, seeing the deformed person. But I remember also, it was like the light of God just came over me, and I felt this incredible love, which didn't make any sense. I remember being baffled afterwards. It was like I was just transported into just this transcendence, this ecstasy. I remember sitting there walking through Walmart, you know, thinking, I want to help this person. What can I want to give my life to them. I have all these crazy thoughts. And I had started having instances like that until I became a Christian. And it was really Buddhism, I think. I thought it was like a two-step, you know, Buddhism and Christianity, sort of two sides of a coin, and, you know, one leading to the other. And Buddhism really opened me up and broke down a lot of the atheism in me. We all have to be open to the infinite creator everywhere, or else we're in big trouble. We're going to give in to the empty forms of this world, which will not deliver happiness.
Was it gradual for you to become the believer, or did it just happen like overnight?
Well, no, it was both. It was extremely. It had to do with my wife getting in a car crash, and that was. There's a whole story behind that. I discussed that in your show in January 2019, and I had I had some visions about it and dreams and so forth. God was telling me it was going to happen. It was a very sort of a crazy time, and God was doing this, working through me, like I just described. But then when this car crash happened, I actually saw an angel. I don't know if you remember that from me talking about that.
I do, yeah. We've got a lot of new listeners, though, who haven't heard your story, so go ahead.
It was that direct vision. It told me without words, I'm a messenger from Christ, and there's a whole big story behind that, you know, the nature of this angel, what it looked like, how it approached me, and so forth, that I became an instant believer at that point, but then later realized God had been working within me sporadically for at least 10 years before.
Wow. All of them. Mm-hmm. What do you say to skeptics now, Jeff, who tell you, I'm not a believer? What do you tell them?
Oh, yeah. I say, well, either one or two things. Yeah, that's a great question. That happens all the time at the jail, every single week. And I just say, well, you haven't experienced God. I was having a debate on YouTube with an atheist just the other day, and they were really attacking one of my videos, saying you're just, you know, living in your dream, fantasy land, fairy tale, religion, you know, coping mechanism, blah, blah, blah. And I said, and then finally they revealed, they said, well, I did what you did for 30 years trying to find God, and therefore there is no God. And I pointed out that was, of course, a logical contradiction. But I said, more importantly, I said, well, wait a minute. So you've never had experience of God. Well, of course you're not going to believe if you've never had experience of God. Why would you believe something just because somebody tells you you should have experience of God, just like all the people in the Bible, for example, do? You know, so many. I mean, they would have, like Paul on the road to Damascus, he would have experience of God and then believe. I mean, that's where so what I tell skeptics, what I say, is you need to reach out, open up your heart, break down the walls, and reach out to the infinite creator that's all around you, everywhere, and have direct contact with him, and then you will know, and you don't have to wonder, and until you're at that point, you really don't have any reason to believe. And then there's a whole second part of this where I can describe to them, you know, how exactly you have direct contact with God, you know, and which is a state of spiritual ecstasy, which there's nothing better than that. That's what the point of all of our lives are for.
Are you there to convince a skeptic or just enlighten them?
Maybe enlightened, but I mean, I'm a Calvinist. Really, it's called a Calvinist Universalist. My website, CalvinistUniversalism.net, describes a lot about that. And in Calvinism, you really hold, like it says in Revelation 4:11, that God creates all things. He's in control of everything. I don't need to sit and try to sell people, convince people of God. I don't need to do anything. God does all that. All I have to do is just be filled with His Spirit, with His light, and overflowing with joy, and then just go interact with people, and He does all the work. Isaiah 26:12 says He does all our works, and I don't need to sit here and worry about, you know, being a salesman. Whenever you see Christians doing that, I just say, you know, you're really missing the boat. You know, why don't you go take the plank out of your own eye, worry about your own life,
yeah,
and you'll get high on your Creator before, you know, trying to fix all these other people, you know, and so forth. So no, I don't really do any convincing. That does happen, convincing, but that's God does all that through me. I don't do any of it.
I'm on a mission personally, Jeff, to get answers. I mean, I want answers about the universe, about after death. I mean, I can't stop. I mean, I'm fixated on trying to get answers, and that's one of the things that keeps pushing me and pushing me and pushing me.
Mm-hmm. Same here. Yeah, there's really no other point. I mean, we live in a world where we're sort of tricked into following these empty forms, you know, the brainwashing TV. You know, we're supposed to be in fear of all these things, and we're supposed to be all obsessed with this and that and everything, all these other things we hear. And I just have turned my back on all of it. I don't, you know, the other day, there was a big shootout here in Kalamazoo, and the police demolished a house. This just happened the other day, and a guy that got out of jail recently that we helped find a house, he was homeless. We got him a house. It was just gift of God. It was an absolute miracle that it really over, incredibly overwhelming, joyful situation of this brother getting this house. But anyway, it was right next to him when he moves in. There's this huge shootout. Anybody can look it up on the news.
Oh,
and I didn't even know about it. And he was texting me saying, wow, it was a big shootout, 17-hour long, right next to my house. And he couldn't believe I didn't know. And I said, well, I'm not going to use my time for those empty forms. It's the forms of the world wage war against the soul. 1 Peter 2:11 says that. And people don't really understand how that equation right there. You have to take the motto of someone like St. Francis of Assisi, for example. He's someone I've really become obsessed with over the last number of years, who follows directly from Jesus, you know, turning his back on possessions, living in squalor, becoming homeless, serving those who have nothing, being himself nothing. This world, George, people simply don't know how real God is and the ways to get in contact with him. We live in this fog of days of a dream in this civilization where people are tantalized by really visual images, screens and rumor and all kinds of unverifiable information or meaningless information, which fills us all with emptiness. And we all wonder why we're feeling such lack of meaning. The meaning is not in this world. Meaning is only in the infinite Creator, God, that is everywhere. That's my experiences have led me to that. And I don't... the world is teaching us to do the exact opposite of what we need to do to have spiritual ecstasy.
Jeff, was it Elon Musk who came up with this simulated theory idea?
No, it was not him. It was Nick Bostrom, and Nick Bostrom kind of even a couple people like Moravec and even really Philip K. Dick, the science fiction guy,
right
before
right.
him, who, man, and then really even Descartes back to the philosopher from the Renaissance, really Enlightenment. Elon Musk has popularized a certain version of what's called simulation theory, and that's the idea that all of you listening right now, that your consciousness is a simulation implanted into you by some other being.
By something.
Mind.
Something, yeah.
Yeah, it's not you think the world is giving you your experiences, but really it's just a TV show, so to speak, being implanted into your consciousness. And, George, well, we can talk about this, and what we're going to show here is that's simply just a fact that that's what's going on. And people are either elated by this idea or they strongly reject it really violently.
I hate it. It bothers the heck out of me.
Yeah. Right. It is. Well, so we'll talk a lot about that. But Elon Musk has really popularized a very specific sort of it, which is sort of taken over the world. And I think there's probably a billion people that are aware of this idea because of him. It was Nick Bostrom of Oxford University came out with what he calls the simulation hypothesis. I've recently published. So you know, I used to teach, and I published quite a bit. I haven't published for a few years, but the three biggest pieces of academic work, discovery, breakthrough that I've ever done have happened in the last 2 years, and that's my book, God Faith, really chapters 1, 2, and 4 are just, I just think, for me, have been incredible breakthrough. And I've had people emailing me telling me the same thing, especially chapter 1 and 4. But, and then also, I published 2 academic papers this year, George. One is called The Implantation Argument, which I think is linked on your site right now.
Yep.
And that's a new proof for the existence of God, and God is the creator of all simulations. And that's a direct attack on the Elon Musk simulation theory, which we'll go over in just a minute, what the problem is with that simulation theory. And then the other one I published is really more a straight theological, philosophical article on infinite universes and salvation, why God chooses only some initially, and then at the end of the world he saves all people, which is the exact message that's in the Bible, exact message which was in the early church, first 300-400 years of the church, but which has not been the message of the church really since Augustine. And unfortunately, the Catholic Church really just ran with it, and they promote this idea of an eternal hell, which people never get out of. Now, there is discussion in a few verses in the Bible about eternal hell, but there's people never talk about the other side of the story, that yes, people are put in eternal hell and God plucks them out. It's a baptism. Luke 3 verse 16 is a baptism of fire. God uses it to save people. And you know, I know a lot of your listeners right now maybe know about this, maybe some others don't, and they're falling off their chair right now, but the verses are simply there. The church has been corrupted. This was prophesied all over the New Testament, really even in the last third of the Old Testament, all over the place as well. Its prophecy has been realized. We're near the end of the world, which I'm happy about. The end of the world is not going to be it's going to be horrific in ways, but for those who are chosen before the fire at the end of the world, it's going to be a time of incredible, increasing joy, elation, ecstasy in the spirit of God. And those who are not chosen, yes, it's going to be rough. It's going to be ugly. And there's a reason why some are chosen and some are not before. That's what that other paper that I published in a journal called Philosophy and Theology from Marquette University, title of the paper is Why God Only Chose Some, which is also linked on your website.
And you've got a couple books out there too, don't you?
The big one,
God Faith.
They're all on my website, but the really God Faith is the one that I'm so... So these three publications, God Faith and then these two articles, have really sort of left me in a spiritual high over the last few years. I'm blessed that God has revealed him to me directly, his infinite light. Any of us really are having that happen deep within us, whether we know it or not, right now, as the Bible tells us. But those three publications have really given sort of, for me at least, sort of a lucid way of describing things about God that are just really exciting and joyful about how real he is, about how we're all being saved, about how his ecstatic light is interacting with us and saving us. And it's all we have to do is, there's certain techniques we can just do to touch it, be one with it.
Hold on, Jeff. We're going to take a quick break. We'll come back and pick it up right there as we talk about the simulation possibility and much more coming up on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, along with Pastor Jeff Grupp, as we are talking about his work and his thoughts as a simulated universe. His websites are linked up at coasttocoastam.com. One of his books includes God Faith, Discovering the Pure Logic Built into the Fabric of Reality. Jeff, what do you mean by a term, mind screen?
Yeah, that's a term that I got from Film Studies, a book on Ingmar Bergman that I read, Princeton University Press. I think it's called Mind Screen, sitting right behind me in my office here. But that is a term I use to describe the simulated consciousness, which is what all of you are. If the simulation theory is true, George, you, me, anybody listening, is a simulation consciousness. I call it a mind screen. So your mind, and your mind is presented to you as a screen, a visualization, and you know, it's got sound, it has feeling, it has moving color images with all these different shapes and predictable patterns and so forth. And it's your mind is a screen, and mind screen is just, that's all anybody listening has ever known. And for all you know, that is all that reality is. And the article that I just published in the journal, the Professional Academic Philosophy Journal, Metaphysica, volume 22, number 2, says that that's all that can exist, are mind screens and or point-sized, what are called philosophical atoms, which are the true basic building blocks of reality, which are little points of energy that have no size, which is actually, believe it or not, George, has been the standard position in quantum physics, really up until string theory, which I'm a kind of an opponent of string theory. I think it's just philosophy. It's not really a science. It's a mathematical philosophy right. that really can't be proven or disproven. And up until then, we had what was called the standard model of quantum physics, which involved the scientific finding that particles are points. And so that leads directly to simulation theory. If everything's a point with no size, then how are we experiencing all this stuff? Because everything would be invisible. Something with no size is invisible. It doesn't have a surface, doesn't have a color. But all we see is surfaces and colors in our mind screen. So we've got a big disconnect here between reality and what we experience as reality. This is kind of a basis for part of the article that I wrote. And it indicates that people, like we've talked about earlier, people want to resist the idea of simulation theory. Let me speak to that real quick, and then let's talk about Musk and Bostrom, what's wrong with their simulation hypothesis, which has been spread all over the world. And I think the reason people often, this is not to implicate anybody, I mean, this happens a little bit with me too, the reason there's resistance to simulation theory is because it's like a sort of dying, because all we know is the world, and people assume that if reality is a simulation, then everything we see around us is not real, which is simply not true. Everything you see around you is real. It's just that it's a state of consciousness, not a mind-independent set of shapes and matter objects outside of you. In other words, you go through your whole life without knowing there's a simulated reality, and if somebody listening to the show tonight wakes up to that there's a simulated reality, it's not like they're going to go through their whole day tomorrow thinking there's a simulated reality. They're going to still go as if everything is mind-independent of them. There's this external reality. However, George, if someone does go through their moment-to-moment life realizing everything is a simulated reality, they will fall into a state of spiritual ecstasy. Now, why is that the case? We already cited the verse 1 Peter 2:11, where the lust of the flesh wage war against the soul. And there's also another verse, James 4:4, those who are friends of the world are enemies of God. What this all means is that for some reason, which is, you know, it takes some explaining, when one focuses their mind away from God and focuses it on other things, such as the world, it leads to emptiness. It leads to consciousness which is not filled with God, which is a consciousness which does not have joy, which, according to the Bible, the only source of joy is God. So you're going to be focusing your consciousness on things where joy is not. So therefore, you get the expected results. We live in a culture of addiction, desperation, emptiness, people trying, going from, you know, addiction to addiction, where addiction can be TV and beer. It can be your job. It can be your own personality. It doesn't have to be. A lot of people in the jail I work at have been hooked on methamphetamine, which is sort of the most extreme drug in our culture, I would say, a satanic plague that's all over the place right now. But so to get to the point, the addiction of the world, rather than rejecting the world and looking past it to the creator of the world, the one who's in all things but not of all things, which is God, Jesus, that right there is the reason that I think simulation theory often, when people stumble across it, it's like dying to what you've always known. Now, but like I said, there is a flip side to it, that it does lead to a state of spiritual ecstasy. In fact, in some of I talk about what's called omnipresence prayer.
Mm-hmm.
I've got some sermons I've done on that, and I talk about that. That's sort of a main ministry theme that comes up in the jail every single week, frequently, because, you know, I'm in the jail quite a bit, and it's always being discussed. Now, I don't usually call it omnipresence prayer. I just call it true prayer, and that's when you actually look at God. Now, most people, I think you can have whole churches full of 500 people who are sitting there all praying, and nobody's looking at God. And now, if people listening,
they might not know what to look for.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm not saying they're bad people or dumb or something. It's just you got to think about it. Like when I talk to you, George, my consciousness is going to intermittently be literally pointing at you. And to talk to God, we have to do the exact same thing. Our consciousness literally has to point at him. The Bible talks about this, Acts 16, 30, 31, John 17, 3, all over the place. And, you know, people talking directly to God, what they're doing is looking at God. Hebrews 12, 2 says, fix your eyes on Jesus. So when we look at God, we're going to be in a state of absolute overwhelmedness, in a state of joy, ecstasy, incredible peace, elation, and so forth. It's just simply an automatic result. Even if we're in the valley of the shadow of death, we're going to be also on the mountaintop in what I call the Jesus high or God high. And this is what really everybody in the world needs. And it's what I think what everybody wants. And everybody's restless and miserable until they get it. That's my opinion. And this is really what's taught in the jail. Now, I don't really use these terms. I usually use Bible verses in the jail. But this is essentially the message of what I call omnipresence prayer, which is praying, you know, looking out into your reality, knowing that God is in all things, pointing your mind right at him, believing him with perfect lack of non-doubt. Doubt is the ultimate enemy of prayer. If I doubted I was talking to you right now, George, I'd kind of be a little bit psychotic, you know, because, you know.
Is it possible, though, Jeff, that mankind created God because they can't comprehend how life started?
So as an excuse. Then where did everything come from? I mean, where did?
I agree with you. I'm just playing the devil's advocate for a moment.
I don't think it's possible. The first chapter of my book, God Faith, talks about a new what I call a new proof for the existence of God. I can sum it up really easily here.
Please.
Look inside your consciousness. You've got things like feelings and thoughts, for example. What are these things? These, especially feelings, they don't look like bricks. They don't look like wood and rock. They don't look like anything physical. And I bet you most people out there are going to say it's spiritual. Even atheist philosophers will say, oh, yeah, our consciousness appears as if it's spiritual. Well, it's kind of funny. I mean, if you're looking at it and it's spiritual, then it is spiritual. So your mind is a spirit. And that's exactly what the Bible says. You know, we are spirits created in God's image, and God's a spirit, John 4:24. So the point is if we're a spirit, then if our inner minds are who we really are, and that it says in the Bible in 1 Samuel 16:7 that when God looks at us, he looks at us, our inside, our spirit, our real self. So if we're a spirit, then we're created by, only a spirit can create another spirit. So we're created by a spirit. And then, so you wonder, okay, well, what's the spirit that's created us? And then the spirit would have to tell you who it is. They have to give you its name. And it says in the Bible, God refers to his name as being I am that I am. And what's your name, George? Your name is I am. My name is I am. Everybody refers to himself as an I am. Mm-hmm. We all have the same name, and it's half of God's name. We all share half of the same name as God. God is simply telling us that I'm the spirit who has created you, which are all spirits. That's kind of a summary of chapter one of my book, God Faith.
If I had asked you the same question when you were an atheist, how would you have answered it?
George, this literally, when I was 35 years old, I published an article called Myriological Nihilism in the journal Axiomatis when I was still teaching, and I used to say this was my big breakout article, but now I think the more recent stuff I've published is, but that article led to what I just said, that consciousness cannot be an aspect of the physical world. This is an academic article. Mm-hmm. It's 175 pages, like a PhD dissertation. And I led to these conclusions here that mind is not, cannot be physical. Now, there's a huge backlash against this in academia. This is also discussed heavily in my book, God Faith, Chapter 1, where everyone wants to say that consciousness is brain tissue, brain systems, neurons. And that simply is not possible, because if I look at my consciousness, look at a feeling, I do not see brain tissue. I do not see neurons. It's something fundamentally different, of a different order of stuff, different order of reality than brain tissue. It's a supernatural. It's spiritual. It looks like it's spiritual when I look at it, just like the Bible says. And Trenton Merricks, for example, is a really interesting philosopher who writes on a lot of the same things that I have. I think where does he teach? Rutgers or something? I forgot. But he's also written on the same thing. Like, you know, you look at consciousness and you look at brain, and the two simply appear to be on different sides of the street. How do you link one to the other? If I'm looking at a visual image in my, you know, so my mind screen, my consciousness has a visual image like it does right now. I'm looking at my computer screen, but the image is actually inside my consciousness. I believe it's out there, but it's actually in my mind. Where is the TV screen of this visual image in my head? If there's a TV screen in my head, I've got a serious problem and a medical emergency. I need to get to the hospital. There is no TV screen in my head.
Finish the show first, then go to the hospital. Okay.
Pardon?
Finish the show first, then go to the hospital.
I'll definitely do that. There is, if you can look all over. Now there's a guy named Jack Gallant who says that he's discovering, you know, patterns like visual images in the primary visual cortex of the brain. I discussed that in the last chapter of God Faith, and I just simply show that it's absolutely false, and it's very easy to refute that and show that it's just based on inept research, but which we can go into later, but just wanted to at least mention that. So there's this huge, huge, huge drive. If academics all over the world suddenly said, yep, okay, we agree, let's just take everything for exactly what it looks like, consciousness looks spiritual, so therefore it is, George, what you have then is you would have a worldwide revolution which would point straight to the existence of a supernatural creator that has created all of our consciousnesses. We'd all look at ourselves as being created, not as coming from, being animals or something. I'm not saying we're not animals, but we're animals with a supernatural ghost inside of us. We'd all look at ourselves that way, and it would lead to an incredible elevation of consciousness everywhere. But unfortunately, academia is going on this completely non-evidential thesis that brain is simply consciousness is reducible to brain, which nobody has an argument for that. It's all I discuss that heavily in chapter one, and it just simply doesn't work. So do you want to discuss the Elon Musk Bostrom?
Yeah, especially the Musk thing, because that's the most current.
Yeah, so, well, Elon Musk, he is really just taking word for word Nick Bostrom's of Oxford University. Elon Musk should do, if he ever hears a show, you should do a little bit better job citing your source there, because it is, Bostrom gets the credit for that. It's a pretty remarkable paper.
When did he come out and say that? Nick did.
Bostrom's article is probably 20 years old now.
That long? Okay.
Yeah, he's been on, I think, Joe Rogan, he's pretty, it's pretty well known, but Musk has really taken it over and popularized, which is kind of, I like that. But here's the thing, though, George, the article I just published in Metaphysica on simulation that says God is the creator of simulations points out what I think is clearly a fatal flaw, and let's discuss that. That simulation theory has to be incorrect, and here's why. So what that simulation theory involves is the idea that information in our world right now, George, is increasing unbelievably. 100 years ago there's no computers, and now we've got all the supercomputers in our pockets, these cell phones, and it's integrating with our bodies, and what's next?
That's true.
We're going to have super consciousnesses soon. So what they say is with the incredible elevation of information and technology, soon there'll be creatures in our world that can create simulations, and they've got reasons to say they'll create way more simulations than there are actual people, and so therefore it's more likely that you in fact are a simulation than not a simulation.
Not.
Now here's the problem with it. It sounds like, wow, that really makes
it's just bizarre.
Yeah, well, it's kind of a straightforward, remarkable argument until you realize one huge fatal problem. And that's this, George. The argument is using the elements of the simulation to make conclusions about what's outside the simulation. Let me explain that in simpler terms. Now, what they're saying is that, so our minds are a simulation, and in this simulation we see what's called civilization. And civilization is escalating towards being a super advanced civilization and beyond. Now that's all locked into the simulation, okay? But what they do is they say that no, that actually tells us what's outside the simulation, that there is actually creatures outside the simulation doing that to us. Now, creating us, our minds, as simulations. So there's super advanced civilizations creating our consciousnesses, and we're simulations. Now, the question is very obvious. I don't think anybody's pointed this out before for some reason, at least not academia. And that's the question is, how do we know that just because in our simulated consciousness there are these ideas like civilization and advanced beings and advanced civilization and so forth, that that's what things are like outside of our consciousness, outside the simulation. And the answer is there's absolutely no reason to think that, and reality could be radically different and no beyond our imagination, nothing like we even imagine. And I give some specific examples in this article I just published of how that might look, of creatures and beings and so forth that would be completely different. So there's no way that things have to be like we think they are in our simulated consciousness outside the simulation. So that's a fatal flaw. It's kind of like going real simple. It's kind of like this, George. It's like saying in my simulated consciousness, which is, you know, I'm locked into, I see apples.
All right, hold on, Jeff. Let's talk more about that when we come back. And we'll take phone calls next on Coast to Coast AM.